90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City, Community Radio. Streaming online at www.kkfi.org.
The views and opinions of this program are those of its host and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Midcoast Radio Project, or its staff and volunteers.
Hello and good morning. Welcome to Cowtown Conversations. I'm your host, Joseph Jackson. Today, our guest is somebody who's returning to our show, Miss Donna C. Watson. She's Juris Doctorate in the Assistant Vice President of Country Club Trust. And this show is about basic estate planning. We're in the midst of COVID and over 500,000 Americans have passed away. And just some basic estate planning tips that can help people ensure that the things in which they want to go to different beneficiaries go to those beneficiaries. Good morning, Donna. Are you with us, ma'am?
Good morning. Can you hear me, Joe?
Yes, we can hear you fine. Thank you. Thank you for coming on this morning. So you are a lawyer, but you're also an author, and we'll talk about your book toward the end. Can you briefly tell the listeners a little bit about yourself? Are you originally from Kansas City?
I'm originally from Kansas City, born and raised, matriculated through the school system here in Kansas City, went to Rockhurst, went to Illinois for law school, and returned back to Missouri in my later years to spend time with my family, to pursue a second career, if you will. And that's what's gotten me to this place in estate planning. So I'm just grateful to be here and share some information with your audience.
And also, Felton mentioned that you are a member of the Kansas City Estate Planning Society and the Mid-America Gift Trust Planners. So definitely want to do that. So you are a vice president with Country Club Trust. What does Country Club Trust do?
So Country Club Trust Company is a company that has, I would say, like two main arms. It's an investment company, and we do handle investments for our clients. But the area that I work in is the fiduciary area, where we do trust administration. I am on a team where I assist primarily with the state and trust administration. So I'm helping people navigate through the provisions of trust, helping them with outright distributions that are called for in the trust, or managing a trust for someone during their lifetime. So when we think about a trust company, they do the same thing an individual trust trustee would do if appointed, but as a company, we're able to have kind of like an arm's length transaction. There's some ability to manage trust in a different way because there's not that personal family relationship most of the time, and so we're able to manage those relationships in a more efficient way.
Now, Donna, we know that everybody should have estate plan, but the pandemic, with 500,000 people passing, has mandated that people should have at least basic estate plan needs. And we're going to talk about them over this hour, but what are some of the basic items that everybody should have to speak for them when they may not be able to speak for themselves?
Well, and I think that's a great question. I think so often when we think about estate planning, we're thinking about property. We're thinking about what do we need to do in order to make sure that property is distributed at death. But when I think of estate planning, I really think of it as life planning. There are things that we need to do during our lifetime just to make things easier, to help mitigate confusion and anarchy, if you will, during your lifetime. And so one of the things I really think that everyone should do is pay attention to things that are going to protect you as an individual. And when I say that, I mean like making sure you have a durable power of attorney. And what that document does, you provide that durable power of attorney to someone. You're giving them authority to handle your financial matters. And when we're talking about handling your financial matters, you need to select someone that can serve as your agent, someone that you trust, someone that has the competency to act on your behalf related to your financial affair. So this person will have the same power that you have as an individual. So you have to think about who is someone that you would want to assign the power to buy and sell real estate for you, enter into contracts for you, handle your banking relationships for you. So that durable power of attorney is so necessary. During this time of COVID, there have been people that have become incapacitated, and there is no one that is in a position to speak or make decisions on their behalf. And that is because they may not have had that durable power of attorney in place. And so it's very important to get that document. Everyone should have one. I have a durable power of attorney. I have selected someone that I feel can step into my stead and make decisions for me. And so that particular document is something we all need, crisis or not, because we know how fleeting life can be. We have seen people during this crisis who are well and healthy one week and on a ventilator the next. And so while we don't anticipate there will be another pandemic, there may be something, a car accident, a fire. Tragedies happen, and so we want to be armed and prepared. So I want to talk about first that durable power of attorney.
And then there's a couple of types of power of attorney, and another one is the general power of attorney. How does the general power of attorney differ from the durable power of attorney?
Okay, so I like people to have durable power of attorney. That durable power of attorney will last even if someone becomes incapacitated. Now, what I do want to mention is that this durable power of attorney, it expires. That authority you give someone expires once the grantor dies, the person that gave the durable power of attorney. It dies. It expires. So when someone dies, you can't say, well, I have a durable power of attorney. Let me take the money out of their bank account. This power only exists during their lifetime. That's very important. So we talk about durable power of attorney. Yes.
Donna, does any power of attorney, when a person passes, is anybody... We've all heard the story. Somebody rushes in. The person has just passed away. Well, I've got power of attorney. Does any power of attorney work once a person has passed away?
No, it does not. It expires at death. And so then there's other measures that you should put into place if you want someone to have some lasting authority. And we'll talk about that probably at another time, because I know we want to keep things kind of simple today.
Correct.
But this durable power of attorney only lasts during the lifetime of the person that gives the durable power of attorney. And I also want to highlight, people tend to get these documents, because you can get them on the internet, and then they try to force people, give me this power of attorney so I can help you, mom, so I can help you, grandmother. That's not really how it's supposed to work. The person is supposed to identify who they want to represent them rather than someone forcing them to provide this authority. So we have to make sure that these are executed in such a way that they won't be challenged, because you can't coerce someone into giving you this durable power of attorney. So just want to make sure I highlight that.
Donna, does a power of attorney have to be notarized in order for it to be valid, or can it be valid with only being signed by the person who's executing it?
No, it does need to be notarized. And the reason why that notary is so important, it authenticates the document, right? So we don't want to create situations where someone is, you know, well-meaning, but they might, you know, sign the name and, okay, this is valid. It has to be notarized just for authentication purposes. And the signature, the person that is signing it, has to have capacity to sign it. So too often there are situations where people are in a fragile state, like they may be on their deathbed, or they may be in the hospital. and not to say you aren't competent if you're on your deathbed, but those are times and those are situations that can be challenged, because who's to say you are or are not? But if someone is in a position and they might inherit or they might take or they might be able to be a beneficiary of something that you might have, those are the times those legal challenges will arise. And they will challenge the validity of this durable power of attorney. So I think it's very important that you be sober-minded and you make this life planning decision to make to execute a durable power of attorney now, before there's a crisis, before there's any undue duress or any urgency. Then that way, that durable power of attorney will not be challenged and it can be valid.
What, and I want to break this down just a little bit. You use the term capacity in regards to executing that power of attorney. What is meant by the word capacity?
Okay, so capacity means that you have an understanding and appreciation of what you are doing, what you are attesting to. So capacity means that I have to understand I'm in my right mind, if you will, and I'm able to make this decision. I was not coerced. I was not bullied into making this decision. It's very important when executing documents that people understand what it is that they're signing. And in situations where you're allowing someone to have access to your financial matters, it's very important that that person that's giving that authority does have capacity.
So if a person cannot speak, can they get a power of attorney?
So if they can't speak, that doesn't necessarily mean they don't have capacity. There are people that can't speak, but they can execute documents if they can hear. It's not necessarily the speech. The speech is the totality of the circumstances, all right? So what I am saying, as we are on this call, as we are talking to this audience, do this now. Do it now. Do it now, so that those type of issues aren't the challenges that you're facing when trying to present this durable power of attorney and really execute the wishes of the grantor.
Now, one we haven't talked about yet, but we're coming to right now, a healthcare power of attorney. What is a healthcare power of attorney and what can it be used for?
Okay, so the healthcare power of attorney, the concept is similar to this durable power of attorney that we talked about with finances. The healthcare power of attorney gives you the ability to appoint someone to represent you in your medical affairs. As we know that there are privacy laws and HIPAA laws, and so your health status isn't a public affair. So that information isn't just fluid and people can gain access to it. So you have to identify someone under this healthcare power of attorney to act on your behalf. And the reason why that is so important, we talked about this earlier, during this time of the pandemic, there have been people who have been incapacitated very quickly. You know, as I said, one week they're fine, the next week they're on a ventilator. And so you want to have someone that can have discussions with your doctor about what's going on with you, that you'll be able to talk about, and we'll segue into this living will that talks about what things you know this person wants and doesn't want. You'll be able to advocate for treatment for this person. And I think the healthcare power of attorney is so important because people have the misconception that, oh, well, this is my mother, so I'm going to talk to the doctor and they're going to give me all this information and I'm going to be able to say this and that. That's not always the case. And so it's very important to have this document in place so that you can advocate and speak on their behalf. I suggest sending a healthcare power of attorney to your physician, to your dentist, to anyone that provides medical care now. Send it to them now. So that's on file. It's there. It's ready. So that you're not going into surgery and you're walking in and here's my health care power of attorney. Those documents are already there. They already know who's going to be able to speak on your behalf. I think it's very important because you want someone that's going to be able to respond in an appropriate manner under adverse situations. So as we were talking about the durable power of attorney, the same considerations you need with the healthcare power of attorney. You need someone who's going to be competent, someone who has the skill set to perform under these circumstances. While your brother may be your next of kin, if you know your brother panics under crisis, does not make good decisions under stress, your brother may not be the best person to select as your healthcare power of attorney, but it is important to select someone who can advocate on your behalf.
Now, and in some cases, some of us are married, but we're married, but we're separated. And what people may not understand is you may still be married to that person legally that you married 20 years ago, but you all may have been separated now for 15 years and just haven't bothered to look at getting a divorce. Now you get sick, you got COVID, you're in the hospital, and you're unresponsive. Since you don't have that healthcare power of attorney designating somebody, that spouse who's been absent for 15 years can now come in, since they're legally still married to you. They're the ones calling the shots instead of the person that you may want calling the shots. Is that right or wrong?
That's definitely something that can occur. And so I just think that it's very important to do this life planning. What's so interesting about this durable power of attorney, this health care power of attorney, and this living will, these documents that we're talking about, it doesn't cost a lot of money. What it costs, I would say, it doesn't cost a lot of money, but it saves a lot of money. It saves a lot of time on the back end, and so it's worth executing. And there are estate planning attorneys that prepare these documents. There are legal services that some people subscribe to, and I'm not going to mention any names specifically, but there are ways of getting these documents. And there are, and we know this, people Google things all the time and they find documents. Now, while these documents you might find on Google, you might download from the internet, they don't always encompass everything that you may need. They do provide some information. And so I just think it's very important. It's worth the investment to talk to someone who practices in this area, who has experience with drafting and creating these types of documents. And it's worth the investment because, as I said, you're saving so much on the back end. A lot of heartache, a lot of chaos, a lot of confusion can be avoided if you have these documents in place.
Now, something maybe people may not think about, in time of stress, you know, you're worrying about that person. You don't know where a copy of that power of attorney may be. Is it a good idea to take it and have one put into your, if you're in a hospital, have it put into the medical file? So in case you're at the hospital, you always have access to that, to a copy of that healthcare power of attorney should any questions come up, or should doctors have any questions about who they need to talk to when people are calling and saying, well, I'm the daughter, you know, I need to make information. But they can look right there in the chart and see who they need to talk to and who's a point of contact for that loved one or family member.
Absolutely. I think you should send that information to your physicians now, like before you're in a crisis. So I think having it on file with your physicians is the best idea. I also think you should keep a copy in your home where someone knows where to access it. And the person that you are identifying as this power of attorney, give them a copy. Yes. Because too often what happens is when you need these documents, you're not in a position to tell someone where these documents are. And so then crisis and chaos ensues. So we want to make sure that we're being proactive. This is for us to have a better quality of life. And these life planning measures that we're putting in place improves our quality of life because we don't have to worry about some unnecessary things or causing confusion. And one of the things that I like to do for the people that I love, I like to make things easier. And it makes it easier for the people you love if you have things in place.
Now, some people may sit and say, you know, I've got a living will. I don't need a healthcare power of attorney. Is a living will the same as a healthcare power of attorney?
No. And so that's the next document that I really want to talk about. That living will is a written document that discusses end-of-life decisions. So the healthcare power of attorney identifies who can speak on your behalf, but that living will is attest to what your preferences are when you're considering end-of-life decisions. So do you want to be resuscitated? Do you want medical treatment? What procedures do you want? What medications do you want? Do you want to be on a ventilator? And I think that living will is so important because you are really taking that person who you've identified under that healthcare power of attorney. You're taking them off the hook. All they're doing is executing what they know your wishes are. Because at the end of the day, that person will have to make some decisions, right? And so those decisions will be, well, do we keep them, you know, on this ventilator? How long do we keep it? Well, if they know you have a living will and your will is said, no, I don't want I don't want to prolong my life. I don't want to use any artificial means or artificial measures to prolong my life. If they already know that, then all they're doing is executing that. And I'm telling you, that is a gift because imagine the amount of guilt and or false responsibility, or when I say responsibility, false guilt or responsibility that they're feeling making those choices. If they already know what you want, all they're doing is executing it. Don't put your loved one in the position to make that decision. Let them know what your wishes are. And a lot of times people say, well, you know, mother told me, grandmother told me. The best way mother and grandmother can tell you is by writing it down in this living will. So get a living will because, as we said, things happen. This pandemic has shown us that. But emergencies and life happens all the time. We see young people having strokes. We see people getting injured in car wrecks. We see there's fires. I mean, there's all kinds of catastrophes that happen that impact our lives and our livelihood. And when I think about that, I think it's just important to have those things written out, have those decisions made so that if someone has to step in and communicate your preferences, they know what your preferences are.
If you have any questions, give us a call on our studio line, 816-931-5534. That's 816-931-5534. And Donna, you are so correct, because I know just in situations that I've been in through that people, well, mom or dad would still be alive if they would have still continued treatment. And it keeps down animosity among siblings and family members if you've already put your what you want on a sheet of paper and giving it to that person. You can sit and say, I'm not making the decision. Mom or dad or uncle, auntie has already made that decision because they put it down on a piece of paper and they let me know what their wish is. So somebody always knows what, you know, you would have wanted to do, because in this age of COVID, you know, people go from being able to speak and talk to tomorrow being on a ventilator. And then it's kind of late at that point in time when they're on the ventilator to be able to try to figure out what they may have wanted.
Right. And you know, we have so many times that we're together now on Zoom, and we've really slowed our pace down so that we could spend more time with family. And we're spending time with family in a different way. But why not use this time to really get our affairs in order? We're especially at the height of the pandemic, we weren't going out as much. Those are the times that we can use this extra time to organize our affairs, to contact someone, to get these legal affairs in order. And it's important. And I know so many people live with the mindset, well, I'll be gone, it doesn't matter. But it does matter. You've built relationships during your lifetime, and it's important not to put people in a lurch just because you're sick or just because you pass away. And if you really love them, you show that love by getting your affairs in order.
Donna, we've got a caller online, too. Caller, can you tell us your name and what your question or comment is for Ms. Watson?
My name is Carrie, and I didn't hear from the very beginning, but is the durable power of attorney still good after the person dies, or is there another documentation?
Oh, okay. Thank you, Carrie. No, the durable power of attorney, that authority expires at death. And so what you would want to do is you would want to have a will or a trust that would provide authority to a person to deal with legal affairs. So when I talk about a will, the will would name an executor of the estate, and so that executor would have power, or the trust would name someone as a successor trustee, and that successor trustee would kind of administer the trust.
Thank you, Carrie, for calling in with that question. Now, Donna, there also a medical care directive. Is that the same as a living will?
Medical care directive is the health care directive. Sometimes it's called a health care power of attorney. They have, it depends on where you are, different jurisdictions, different communities use different names. Those are all the same. The living will is the one that talks about how do I want my end-of-life matters to be executed. The health care directive, the health care power of attorney, those are all synonymous with who I'm assigning to deal with my medical affairs.
Now, Donna, the medical or health care power of attorney, is it always active, or does it only take effect if you become incapacitated?
No, well, it can, that power, you're giving someone power and authority depending on how it is written. Usually, it's a simultaneous authority, and even in the durable power of attorney, you can have a simultaneous authority, or you can have it arise, it can come into play if a certain circumstance occurs. So it's depending on how it is written. Generally, though, a lot of people give simultaneous power, and the reason why is you don't want it to be dependent on you being adjudicated incapacitated or adjudicated no longer competent to handle your affairs. Because who's going to adjudicate that? And then how? And then who? Like, do you need letters from a doctor? And then how long will it take to get those letters? And then so then that prolongs the ability for that person to then step into your position. So generally, if it's someone that you trust, you can go ahead and assign them that authority presently because you don't want to have a gap before that power arises.
Now, Donna, what are some of the risks in giving somebody a power of attorney, especially when we start talking about grandma or grandpa's bank accounts, you know, the property, different things like that?
Well, there are risks. So when you're saying I'm giving someone a durable power of attorney, or I'm assigning someone or appointing someone as my attorney in fact under a durable power of attorney, you're really giving them as much authority as you have over your assets, over your financial affairs. And so that person, as I said, they can enter into contracts. They can buy and sell real estate. So that's a lot of power. So if it's not someone you trust, that's not someone you should identify. And let me be so very clear. Just because someone is your relative, that does not mean that's the person you need to identify and select as your attorney in fact. Now, I'm not saying they can't do it, but I'm not saying they necessarily should do it. Like, we all know we have family members that are not good with money. They don't, they're not good with their own money. So why would you put them in that position? It's almost like setting them up for failure. But you also know you have someone in your family that is good with handling business. They take care of things. They meet deadlines. They file their taxes. They'll file your taxes. They will handle things in an appropriate way. So it's very important to identify the right person, because otherwise you're giving someone the same power that you have, and that power can go to their head, or that power can go awry if they are not disciplined enough to take that responsibility seriously.
Now, Donna, can you, we've talked just in this case about giving it to one person, but could you give power of attorney to, say, two people if you wanted to?
Yes. So what we generally do is you select someone, and then you have a contingent person in case that person is unable to serve. Now, what I find can be problematic is having two people to serve simultaneously. Why? Because when do two people agree on things, often agree on things, okay? So then it's the same as you have friends, and you have friends, and you and your friends decide you're going to go to dinner. But you and your friends have different tastes, and so we have to agree on every single thing. And that rarely happens. So what I'm saying is it's best to have one person serve and have a contingent person, because it's hard to get two people to always agree. And if you put people in that position, things may not get handled because they can't seem to agree on things. So, but it depends on how it's written. If that's the way you want to have it written, that's something you can talk about with your attorney. But I'm saying in practice, it's usually better when you can have one person serving, because then you don't have to worry about two people being on the same accord making the same decision.
So we're going to take a short break. You're listening to 90.1 FM KKFI. This is Cowtown Conversations. I'm your host, Joseph Jackson. And today, I guess, is Donna C. Watson, Juris Doctorate, Vice President of Country Club Trust. And we're talking about basic estate planning documents that everybody should have in place during the COVID pandemic. Stay tuned. We're right back after this short break. We're back. This is 90.1 FM, KKFI. This is Joseph Jackson, host of Cowtown Conversations. And our guest today is Donna C. Watson. And we've got a caller on line two. Caller, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead. Can you tell us your question or comment, and what part of town you're calling from for Donna?
Well, I'm calling from out of state.
Okay, go ahead.
But I lived in Kansas for 25 years.
Okay.
And I was a power of attorney for a neighbor, and it turned out to be just a nightmare. And I thought I had everything legal with a lawyer and everything, and the state came after everything. And so it's, you know, you really have to protect yourself from the state coming after you. Because this was a single person, she was in her 90s, we were friends, she didn't have any family. And so it's something you have to protect yourself even. You know what I mean?
Okay. That's definitely something we'll definitely talk about. So thank you so much, ma'am.
Okay, well, take care.
Go ahead, Donna.
Oh, and so what I think... And what I am hearing is the situation of being the power of attorney may not have worked the way she had hoped. And there were still some issues arising after did your friend pass away?
She disconnected.
So when we're talking about this power of attorney, this power and this authority only addresses lifetime issues. So then if there are issues that arise after death, there has to be other estate planning vehicles in place to deal with that. So I can't stress enough the importance of recognizing that this durable power of attorney only gives authority during lifetime. So then if you're talking about what happens after death, there has to be other measures put in place. And so I believe I'll have another chance to come on the show and talk about some of those options.
We're gonna do another show right now. We're just talking about those basic documents that people can do. Now, one thing we haven't touched on that we definitely touched on, a lot of households in America, especially in Kansas City's neighborhoods, are headed by women. You know, they're single women. They may have 1, 2, 3 children, and they may contract the COVID. The children are staying with grandma or auntie or somebody else or another family member. What can people do to make sure that, you know, the person you would want to raise your child is the person that, should you not be able to speak, you know, how about... Is the guardianship something that can be done, or was that something they can set forth in writing, somebody that they want to appoint to take care of their children in case they're unable to do that?
Yes, and that will can be used to identify a guardian, and I think that that's important. And I think it's important, if you have minor children, to have a will, period, point blank. I don't care if you have non-probate transfers in place. If you have minor children, you need to have a will. And you need to have a will because you need to identify a guardian. And that will needs to be proved to the court, and that guardian needs to be assigned. Period.
And, folks, why this is so important right now, I know I was one of the fortunate people who, you know, survived COVID. But I know people who have not survived. There's a young man that I know of who I've known him since he was 4, and his dad passed away and he was a minor. He didn't survive COVID. And I talked to someone this morning and they lost a loved one to COVID. So it's important to have these documents in place. So as we're talking about, Donna, some things are non-transferable. But before we get to that, what happens if you decide you want to change a beneficiary? What is that process? Not a beneficiary, but a person for the power of attorney.
Oh, that's fine. It's revocable. Yes. You can decide this one supersedes the other one, and you have to execute a new one. I would say specifically state the one that was dated such and such. This supersedes that one, and so then this one becomes the one that's in effect. So you do have that option to select a new one. What becomes interesting is, if you select a new one, giving notice to people, to the bank, to other finance organizations that you deal with, that person no longer has that power of attorney. So, yes, but you do have that option, and I think that's important to know.
And then remember to put that one in your healthcare files and everywhere else so that people will know. We've got a caller on line 2. Caller, can you tell us your name and what part of town or what your comment or question is for Donna?
Yes, my name is Justine Burton, and I live in Lawrence, Kansas.
Go ahead, Justine. What's your question?
And I have a will, and I have a living will, and I've had them for quite a while. And the DNR part of it, would I still need a DNR? Since I do have a living will, if something happened, would I still need the DNR? Or would the living will take place of that?
Okay, so I think both documents are fine. So there may be some DNR language in your living will, but what's wrong with having both? It's kind of like when we're thinking about protecting our lives, we can have on a belt and we can have on suspenders. Okay, that might be overkill, no pun intended, but that's protecting, making sure those pants stay on and they stay up. So I use that illustration to just say there's nothing wrong with having both. You want to make sure that DNR language is in the living will, but if it's not, then now you have a separate document that addresses that. So I say there's nothing wrong with having both.
Okay, yeah, because I know I made it pretty explicit exactly what I wanted in the living will, and that I didn't want any life-sustaining things if I wasn't going to be able to walk away and function as a human being. So, I was just thinking because I know I was going to have my daughters as the power of attorney, but can you have someone else besides a family member to do this, you know, as far as your, like your a power of attorney and for your directives?
Yes, you sure can. And sometimes it doesn't make sense to have your family member. I think about circumstances where you have parents who have children, adult children who live in another jurisdiction. So let's say you live in Kansas. Say your daughter or your son lives in California. So yes, they may have this power of attorney, but how are they going to really execute it? They live in California. So you might identify a friend. That might be someone that you would appoint. So you have to think about where the person is situated geographically and their ability to perform. So that may not be that next of kin. It may be someone else.
Right, because I have my daughter in Texas, and I have one in Minnesota, so that kind of answers my question there, that it'd be, especially if you need some immediate medical attention and stuff like that, I would imagine.
Yes, yes. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, and you have a blessed day now.
You too.
So, Donna, for those that may not know, what is meant by the term DNR?
Do not resuscitate. So that's someone that makes a decision, no, I do not want you to use these means to try to revitalize me. If I am no longer, like, my heart is not beating and it stopped, just let it stop. Yeah.
So, Donna, there are some items called non-probate transfer. What is a non-probate transfer?
So, how I want to explain it, we all own things. And the way that we transfer that ownership at death will either be executed using the probate court, going through a process called probate, or they will be transferred using non-probate transfers. Okay, so non-probate transfers are ways that you transfer property without the use of the court system. And they're... this is a very efficient way of transferring assets to whoever you identify, and it's a technique that a lot of people use in order to avoid probate. Now, probate, I know, gets a bad rap. People are like, I'm trying to avoid probate. Sometimes probate is necessary. You know, we talked about someone having a will and identifying a guardian. That's a situation where probate is necessary, okay? So we can't be adverse to probate, but there are also times where probate may not make sense, financial sense, maybe the time, it's just not even necessary. And so we're going to talk about these non-probate transfers. I want to talk about bank accounts. Often people have, they own bank accounts jointly, or they have a payable on death notation. This says, when I pass away, my bank account goes to XYZ. Why do we do that? Because then that person can automatically get access to those funds. They can access that account. They can close it. They can withdraw from it. It's their account. And that's an easy way of transferring bank account assets to another person. Another non-probate transfer is beneficiary designation. So say you have an IRA or a 401k, or even an insurance policy. Whenever you have those type of accounts or an insurance policy, they automatically send you a document that says, who are your beneficiary designations? And you just list someone. If I have an IRA, this is the person I want to own my IRA at my death. Why is that important? Because then you don't have to go through probate or go through probate to make that transfer. And with IRAs, it's easy. It's easy to transfer those balances to that next person. For that insurance policy, you want to identify someone. That's an easy way of transferring wealth to the next generation by having an insurance policy and designating someone. And these designations need to be reviewed. I can't tell you how many times people are on their second marriage and they forgot to take the first husband off of the policy, and oh shoot, that's what I meant to do, but that's not what you did. So you need to review these designations periodically. Then I want to talk about your home. So in Missouri, you can have a beneficiary deed, or in Kansas, you can make a transfer on debt deed, and these deeds will automatically transfer ownership at death. Why is this important? Because the person doesn't presently have an ownership interest in this property, but at your death, they do. So now you can avoid probate. The person can just go in. They now have ownership and authority over this house. They can sell it. They can. Now, this doesn't talk about what happens to the underlying mortgage, and I want you to be very clear about that. What the goal is you want to put someone in a position where they can either keep this house or they can sell this house and get the equity out. But the underlying mortgage is not the same as the transfer on death deed or the beneficiary deed. But these are ways in which we can transfer ownership without the court's approval. It goes quickly. It's automatic. It arises out of law. There's no formalities with it. And really, all it really requires is some paperwork and review of that paperwork, I say annually, in case circumstances change.
Now, Donna, there's also one that we all have one, or a lot of us have one, which is a car. And the DMV here in Missouri has made it easy that you can establish a TOD, transfer on death, for your car just by going down and getting a new title paying $750 and designating the person that you want to have your car. And if, you know, you can only designate one person, I do believe, but if you want to but if you want to change that person, you just go back. But it only works on vehicles that you've paid off, if I'm correct.
No. You can put a transfer on death notation on your car, and you can still be paying on that car. That's just how it's titled.
Okay.
So that's kind of similar to what I was saying with that mortgage, that underlying mortgage with the house. So, like, someone may have title to it, but there's still that lien because you owe on it. So those are two separate things, which they still have the power over that asset. So then they can sell it and then pay off whatever, you know, or, you know, make arrangements and pay off the lien or whatever. But they now have authority over that asset. And you're right. The car is a really simple. The Department of Motor Vehicles makes it very simple to change title or transfer title for a car. So, yes, you're right. And I think that it's important because while you may need probate for some things, it can be more efficient if you just use these non-probate transfers. But I do want to admonish the audience to look at your designations periodically, because things change. People pass away, or maybe you want to change them just because circumstances have changed. Maybe you don't want to leave your car to your brother anymore. Maybe you want to now leave it to your nephew, and so maybe that makes more sense. And especially if your car is paid off, maybe that's a way that you'll be a blessing to your family. So I think it's important that we get these things in place, but we have to review them. Yes.
As we mentioned at the top of the hour, you're also an author. What was the inspiration for your book? And if you could tell our listeners the name of your book.
Okay, so I wrote the book, My Legacy Experience, How My Mother's Life Prepared Me for Her Death, in 2019. And I wrote the book because I went through the process of administering my mother's estate. And there were so many things that my mother put in place that made that process so much more manageable for me. I am my mother's only child, and I had to deal with, selling her home, going through the contents of her home, going through the process of of just handling all of her financial affairs after death. And she put a lot of things in place that made that easier for me. And it was difficult. And I know that during a time of grief, one of the things that I learned when I went to grief counseling was that's not the time that you make life-changing and life-altering decisions. But unfortunately, you have to make life-altering, life-changing decisions during a state administration. And so being able to do that was eased by some of the things that she put in place, because I knew what she wanted. She had her affairs in order. I had resources to handle things, and so it was really a blessing. And so I wanted to use those lessons and kind of walk through that process with people, and I wanted to outline that process so that people could begin making those decisions for themselves and putting things into play so that their loved ones would have the same experience that I did.
And your book is available to everybody because it's on everybody's favorite shopping mart. Can you tell the listeners where they can find your book at?
Yes. It's on Amazon, and it's also on my website, mylegacyexperience.com. And on that website, there's a lot of information about life planning. We're going to call it life planning, but estate planning. And there's information about what that looks like, what are some things we need to put into play and to get created, some documents that we need to get created so that we can live lives that are balanced. We can live lives that are kind of rooted in love, and that we have measures that are put in place so that we're leaving a legacy and that we're making things better for the next generation. And I'm very big on that.
And as Donna has stated, it's available on Amazon, and it's a step-by-step guide to help you through dealing with those items before you really need to deal with those items and have those processes in place to help you during those times of difficulty, bereavement, and grief. We want to thank Donna for being our guest today. We never end Cowtown Conversations without our community mentor. Reminder, if you need preparation, help with your taxes, call 201 to be connected to a tax preparation center near you. Preparation is free for those who earn less than $57,000 a year. COVID-19 and recent cold weather has increased the number of people who need help with their utility bills. And again, call 211, or you can visit the Evergy webpage at evergy.com for more information. Also, Truman Medical Center is now currently giving coronavirus vaccinations for people in Tier 2. To sign up, call 816-404-2273. And you can also sign up on the KCMO webpage and go to 311 to sign up. Join us next week as our guest is going to be Dr. Rex Archer, Director of the Kansas City Health Department, and Mr. Frank Thompson. And we're going to talk about myths, misconceptions, and untruth about COVID and vaccinations, because COVID has really destroyed the African-American community and it has decreased our life expectancy. And we need to know how to prepare ourselves to fight and combat this pandemic. Stay tuned for Larry J, My Place with Larry J. Have a great day. Wear a mask and stay safe.
This is a KKFI Black History Moment honoring Shirley Chisholm. She was an educator, civil and women's rights activist, author, and a politician who became the first Black woman to serve in the U.S. Congress and the first woman to seek the nomination for the President of the United States, one of the two major parties. She was born in Brooklyn November 30th, 1924, to immigrant parents from Barbados and Guyana. After high school, she attended Brooklyn College, where she distinguished herself on the debate team and graduated with honors in 1946. Later, working as a nursery school teacher, she earned a master's degree at Columbia University in childhood education during 1951. With constant reminders of gender and racial inequality, she took action by joining her local League of Women Voters, NAACP, the Urban League, and the Democratic Party in Bedford-Stuyvesant, Brooklyn. In 1964, she was elected into the New York State Legislature, becoming the second African-American to do so. And in 1969, Shirley Chisholm became the first black woman to serve in the U.S. Congress. While in the Congress, Fighting Shirley continued to fight for racial and gender equality for the poor and ending Vietnam War. Her model and title of her autobiography, Unbossed and Unbought, highlighted her unbiased advocacy for women and minorities during her 7 terms in the Congress. In 1983, Chisholm retired from Congress and returned to teaching at Mount Holyoke College and co-founded the National Political Congress of Black Women. This was a KKFI Black History Moment honoring Shirley Chisholm.
Born as the daughter of freedmen in 1902, Sarah Rector rose from humble beginnings to become the wealthiest black girl in the nation at the age of 11. Rector and her family were African-American members of the Muscogee Creek Nation who lived in a modest cabin in the predominantly black town of Taft, Oklahoma, which at the time was considered Indian territory. Following the Civil War, Rector's parents, who were formerly enslaved by Creek tribe members, were entitled to land allotments under the Dawes Allotment Act of 1887. As a result, hundreds of black children, or Creek freedmen miners, were each granted 160 acres of land as Indian Territory integrated with Oklahoma Territory to form the state of Oklahoma in 1907. While lands granted to former slaves were usually rocky and infertile, Rector's allotment from the Creek Indian Nation was located in the middle of the Glen Pool oil field and was initially valued at $556.50. Strapped for cash, Rector's father leased his daughter's parcel to a major oil company in February of 1911 to help him pay the $30 annual property tax. 2 years later, Rector's fortune took a major turn when independent oil driller B.B. Jones produced a gusher on her land that brought in 105,000 gallons per day. Rector's notoriety ballooned just as quickly as her wealth. Her fame became widespread, and she received numerous requests for loans, money gifts, and 4 marriage proposals. By the time she turned 18, Rector was worth an estimated $1 million, or about $11 million in today's terms. She also owned stocks, bonds, a boarding house, a bakery, and a restaurant in Muscogee, Oklahoma, and 2,000 acres of land. She eventually moved to Kansas City, Missouri, where she bought a grand home that still stands today. It became known as Rector Mansion.
FM, KKFI Kansas City Community Radio, streaming online at www.kkfi.org.
Good morning, Kansas City. Beautiful day in the Kansas City area that it is.